Fundamentally, when you go about identifying complaints that you can raise, either for the first time on appeal or after it's too late for the other side to do anything about it, there's some places you need to go. Those complaints generally come from either opinions, such as fundamental error or other stuff, but always watch for conflicting authority. We're going to, as a matter of fact, as we go through the PowerPoint, you're going to see from time to time where I've put in all bold and red conflict. And it'll strike you, there's lots of times when the courts of appeals conflict on these things. The rules themselves expressly sometimes tell you that you can raise things for the first time on appeal. 33.1D in a bench trial, legal and factual insufficiency. We're going to look at that because that's a real, in my opinion, fertile ground for you to bring something to the table after the trial is already over. And you need to think about how far you can push those legal and factual insufficiency complaints. Another thing, if you're desperate enough or if you're inventive enough, you might consider invoking the federal rule about things that you can first complain about on appeal. Texas courts don't expressly adopt this rule or follow it, but as we're going to see here, there are a lot of things that courts have held that you can raise for the first time on appeal that really don't look like fundamental error or lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and yet they are still things that can be raised for the first time on appeal. And so it makes me wonder if maybe Texas courts aren't using this standard, but just not saying they've done so. Okay, so what are the things that you can first raise for the first time on appeal? Well, fundamental error, which goes back a long, long, long way. But now, and you will see this boilerplate 1,000 times, fundamental error is a discredited doctrine, and it only applies in lack of subject matter jurisdiction, some juvenile delinquency cases and parental right termination cases, which we won't look at this morning, and when the error directly adversely affects the public generally as declared by statute or constitution. That last portion a fundamental error, you don't get that very many times, but it is out there. One thing that you shouldn't be misled by, just because you come up with a new constitutional argument after you get brought in, constitutional arguments are like every other complaint. You have to preserve them at the trial court. Just because it says constitutional on it doesn't mean you can raise it for the first time on appeal. So don't be misled by that. What are some examples of lack of subject matter jurisdiction? And the rest of this presentation is going to feel like you're on a freight train headed downhill through breakneck paths, and I'm not going to try to explain a lot of these. It's just hang on, and the explanations are in the paper. Lots of examples, though. Lack of standing. If a party has a lack of standing, that's part of lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Lack of rightness, defective service, damages in the claim exceed the trial court's jurisdiction. Preemption regarding the choice of forum, not preemption regarding the choice of law. There's a distinction there. Sovereign immunity, statutory prerequisites to suit, sometimes. But just because the statute says you have to do A, B, and C before you bring your claim doesn't mean that that's a jurisdictional hoop. So you have to be really careful there. That a state agency has exclusive original jurisdiction over a claim. If you are dealing with a lawsuit where the one of the entities involved is regulated by the state, go look at the regulatory statute, because that statute may give exclusive original jurisdiction over the claim involved to the regulatory agency. And if it does, the trial court doesn't have jurisdiction until the agency has done whatever it's supposed to do. Mootness, if a case becomes moot, that deprives the trial court of jurisdiction, and a case involving the political question doctrine. What are some other specific complaints you can raise on appeal that really don't look like a lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and yet there are holdings out there that say that you can raise these things for the first time on appeal? A contract's ambiguity. It's a question of law. Four things about trial courts or trial judges. is a trial judge constitutionally disqualified because of interest, because of connection with the parties, because of being a prior counsel in the case? Has the trial judge taken actions beyond the scope of the trial judge's assignment, either when the judge was assigned to the case or perhaps the directive that was given by the Court of Appeals on when it remanded the case to the trial court? A challenge to the trial court's qualifications, that is, the trial judge isn't qualified to hold the office. Trial judge who testified at trial. The trial judge's bias or prejudice shown on the face of the record, you might assume, and you would be right, this is not easy to prove. It's a very high threshold.